A major political shakeup on the First Coast as Andrew Crenshaw announces he's leaving Congress. Good morning, and live from Studio 5, this is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Melissa Ross. The show is always live at 9. Make sure to subscribe to the daily podcast on iTunes and Stitcher, and you can watch the show now, too, video on demand with our partner TVJax.com. Well, just ahead, it's the big political news of the week. Our crack in studio analysts break down what's next for the First Coast position in Congress as Andrew Crenshaw announces he's not running for re-election. Who might have the inside track to replace Crenshaw? Get on the line now with your thoughts and questions at 549-2937. Then later, a preview of this weekend's tour of homes in Riverside, Avondale, the hottest home tour around, and a look at weekend events. All of that coming up this morning. But first this hour, a bombshell announcement, a surprise for many, from Congressman Andrew Crenshaw. The long-serving Jacksonville Republican has announced he will not seek re-election. What does this mean for the First Coast power position in Washington? Well, UNF political scientist Matt Corrigan and A.G. Gankarski of Florida Politics have been following this, and they join us now with a look at the ramifications of this shakeup. Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
And here's our question to callers. What are your thoughts about Andrew Crenshaw announcing he's retiring from Congress? Who would you like to see run for that seat? Give us a call. 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. Email and tweet the show. A.G. Gankarski, let's begin with you. It appears as though former Sheriff John Rutherford has the inside track to replace Crenshaw, as we're learning this morning that UNF President and former Mayor John Delaney has decided he will not seek the seat. What do we know right now about who is jockeying for position in this race?
Well, what we know is this. John Rutherford is looking at it very strongly. He told me that at FloridaPolitics.com. He told the Florida Times Union that. Michael Munns, Peter Rummel, Lenny Curry, they're all behind Rutherford. If he's in, I'm in, Lenny Curry said. John Delaney, as we report on FloridaPolitics.com this morning, is standing down from this race. So the field is clearing for Rutherford in terms of establishment support. The machine that put Lenny Curry into office, Rose Lenny Curry, from having no name ID to being Jacksonville mayor, they are behind Rutherford. Rutherford's got universal name ID, popularity of the Republicans throughout the region. He's a strong candidate in terms of running a three-month compressed campaign. And, we've heard talk from virtually everybody who is everybody in Jacksonville, looking at this office. The one person I'm hearing is still looking at it is Jay Fant. He's state representative from Avondale, Ortega, west side of Jacksonville. He's been there less than a term. Jay Fant does not have much of a legislative record. It's sort of like Eisenhower said about Nixon, if you give me a week, I'll think about something that he did. I can't think of something that Fant did, but Fant's got the money and his family to where he could make a run. The Republican Congressional Committee would, be very happy to self-finance candidate. It would make their path easier, but I don't know if Jay Fant, with his record, with the issues in his past, can really run against the Rummel, Curry, Munns machine and John Rutherford, who is Teflon.
549-2937. Give us a call with your thoughts about all of this. Matt Corrigan, what does it say that it takes a political machine, as AG called it, to get someone elected to Congress?
Yeah, and we'll see if this works. Michael Munns and Bruce Barcelo in 1992 really not created the district, but really were big players in getting Tilly Fowler elected. And then that, worked with Andrew Crenshaw as well. So when Michael Munns came out saying I would support Rutherford, that was a big deal because he's had long experience, especially in this district. If you're trying to figure out who's going to run, I think the Delaney announcement, which AG reported, is huge because it does create an opening for somebody else. And the question is, in this Trump national environment where, institutional support is not seen as being so great, at least on a national level, is there room for a protest candidate, a Tea Party candidate, a celebrity candidate? Because it'll be fascinating to see if this Trump experiment nationally is can it apply locally? And the answer is probably no, but I'll be interested to watch this.
Andrew Crenshaw was looking at a challenge from the right. Do you think that affected his or impacted his decision?
Well, what he's telling people like Kent Justice at WJXT is no. He thought about it over Easter and decided that, you know, maybe it's time. He's accomplished what he wanted to accomplish, and there are things he wants to do with his life, you know, enjoy his wife, Kitty, and all of that. In 2014, we did see a Tea Party challenge to Crenshaw, Ryman Schoaf. He ran from Fleming Island, so kind of carpet-bagged in, and he got 30% of the vote, give or take, in a primary. He got a lot of noise made by the Tea Party. And, yeah, I mean, Fant's a rich boy, but he speaks Tea Party very well. That's kind of his shtick. So, I mean, you know, Fant could get in, get 30, 35%, you know, with the kind of, you know, mailers that have three American flags on them and, you know, a bunch of bold-faced text. I mean, that stuff does work. But is it going to overcome John Rutherford, who has experience running the Jacksonville Sheriff's Office for over a decade? You know, his administrative experience, he speaks the language, he can talk pro-life without pandering. You know, the sort of issues that Donald Trump runs into where he tries to mimic social conservatism, John Rutherford doesn't have to do that. John Rutherford feels it in his core. And, you know, Bruce Barcelo was brought up a little bit ago, and that's an interesting thing because Barcelo has been Rutherford's guy, you know, for most of his political career. So, you know, for this to work, Barcelo's got to coordinate with the Munns Rummel political consultants that data targeting. So, you know, seeing how that shakes out in the hierarchy is going to be something to watch for political insiders.
If you're just tuning in, we're discussing what it means for the First Coast as Congressman Andrew Crenshaw announces he will not run for re-election in November. We'll go to your calls in a moment at 549-2937. Now, Matt Corrigan, at the same time as Crenshaw makes this decision, our other representative in this area in Congress, Congresswoman Corrine Brown, her seat potentially could be in play due to issues she's been facing as of late, an ethics investigation. She's continuing to fight the redrawing of her district. A final decision on that should be coming any time. How does all of this affect Jacksonville? Because we had two long-serving representatives. Corrine Brown, in particular, had weight on certain issues, and Andrew Crenshaw was a big proponent of military issues. How will this help or hurt Jacksonville when it comes to our position at the national level?
It's going to hurt, and I would clearly say that Brown's district is up for grabs, even if you know, some of her legal issues don't come to pass. Al Lawson's a really good candidate, and he knows North Florida, and so you know, I think she's in for the toughest, you know, political fight of her career. And so if you lose both of those, because what was interesting is we had one on one side of the aisle and the other on the other side of the aisle, if you lose both of those with that type of experience, you know, in Washington, seniority matters. It matters on committees. It matters with relationships. You've already heard people from the port come out and say how Crenshaw has been so important, the military issues. It's going to hurt. There's no question about that.
We've had Crenshaw in his seat for 8 terms. Of course, he replaced the late Tilly Fowler. The legendary Blue Dog Democrat Charlie Bennett held the seat for decades before that. So there's been remarkable stability in that seat. And A.G. Gankowski, Corrine Brown, of course, has been in Congress since the early 90s herself. So two very familiar faces could be gone from the political scene, not just one.
Yeah, this is a really big deal because, you know, Crenshaw was involved in the Appropriations Committee. He was seniority on that. You know, Corrine Brown obviously delivers on project after project for, you know, both sides of the aisle for this area. She's able to get people on the phone and make things happen. So if you've got rookies going in, they're going to have to learn the lay of the land. They're going to have to amass seniority. Jacksonville is going to take a hit. If you look at CD5, you know, we've talked about Audrey Gibson, talked about Mia Jones. There are strong rumors that Alvin Brown may be looking strongly at this one, waiting to get confirmation from his side. You know, so, I mean, people in CD5 are going to have to start moving because right now your Jacksonville candidate is LJ Holloway, who's not a viable candidate. And if Al Lawson is representative, yeah, he knows North Florida, but he does not know Jacksonville. You know, he does not have any interest in advocating for Jacksonville, and he wouldn't know how to begin. And, you know,
could we see former Mayor Alvin Brown throw his hat in the ring for Kareem Brown's seat in Congress?
I think he would be honored and humbled to take it to the next level. I think that if he was getting the right kind of backing, and we know the money people who could give him that kind of backing, you know, he might be the Jacksonville candidate. There has to be a coalesced Jacksonville candidate, because if you have two or more from this region running against Lawson, Lawson's going to get all those votes west of 295. So they're going to be fighting over a small subset of the vote, and a subset of the vote that turns out less compared to those people out west who, by and large, are blue dog Democrats, many of whom voted for Martin O'Malley in the Democratic primary, and many of whom voted for Bernie Sanders just because they didn't like Hillary.
Yeah, I think, you know, Mayor Brown would be a good candidate in this district, because it stretches across the, you know, the panhandle, and you know, a conservative Democrat, which is, you know, very rare these days, probably could fit pretty well there. And so it would be fascinating if he ran.
And we want your calls, political junkies, as Andrew Crenshaw announces he's stepping down from Congress after 8 terms representing Jacksonville. What are your thoughts about the conventional wisdom that former Sheriff John Rutherford has the inside track to run and win that seat? It's 549-2937. Larry in Murray Hill. Hi, Larry. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Very quickly, first of all, there's so many ways, things to discuss here with this transition, but I'm wondering if you or your panel have an opinion about that this might be becoming more of a grassroots thing, and that Congressman Crenshaw is finally realizing that there is a generational, if not true, shift in the feeling of local politics and, you know, state politics in Northeast Florida. It's traditionally been a, you know, a very red state, and with President Obama's first election, his first campaign, it began to shift. And I'm wondering if the congressman has just finally had enough of fighting this battle that seems to be inevitable in Northeast Florida. I thank you again for your show, Melissa. I'll take my comments off the air. You do a wonderful job every day. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Larry. Thanks for the call, Larry in Murray Hill. What about his perspective?
Yeah, that's a definitely interesting perspective. You know, let's unpack it a little bit. The seat is 70% Republican. So basically, the Republican primary carries that seat. There is no chance, barring a scandal or something really crazy, for a Democrat to win. That being said, Andrew, in his last primary, despite having the noise machine against him of the grassroots, got 70%. You know, he might have had to face somebody like that again, but, you know, it's hard to run against Andrew Crenshaw. You know, he's been able to talk just enough grassroots Tea Party language to sort of keep people placated. But, you know, Andrew is the moderate Republican, more or less, of the Tilly Fowler mold, a little bit more to the right on abortion and some issues. But, you know, Andrew gets business done. And, you know, I think he just thought it was his time.
Matt Corrigan, what about the caller's point of view that a more moderate voice might be getting tired of more strident rhetoric on the right flank of his or her party?
Yeah, and I think it's a indication of where we are in our national politics. You know, Andrew Crenshaw would not call himself a moderate, especially when he started to run in the year 2000. And now you probably would be a moderate in the party. And so
the party's moved ever
right. And it's moved more activist and grassroots. And you can see this playing out in the Republican primary. And so, does that all filter down? Is there someone who can pick up that energy and momentum? And I think what the Rutherford campaign has to be careful is being labeled part of the dreaded establishment. Because that's a dirty word in Republican politics these days, and so I think they can do that by saying, you know, he's law enforcement, he's not a typical politician, et cetera.
But how is a guy like John Rutherford anything but?
I understand.
Anything but really an establishment figure.
Right, and
he's the epitome of authority, establishment. How does he change that image if that's what the public is demanding?
I don't know if he has to, because this is a race where the establishment is going to strike back. I mean, Lenny Curry's got a pension tax referendum to sell. John Rutherford's going to help with that. They are going to synergize like they did during the mayoral campaign and basically help each other along. So, you know, the money people have every interest in, you know, putting enough money behind Rutherford to drown out the sort of grassroots resistance. You can make a grassroots anti-establishment play if you're Donald Trump and you can self-finance and you get tons of earned media. But, you know, who of the dark horses running against Rutherford, conceptually speaking, you know, could do that offhand? I don't see that person with name ID. I don't see that person with the ability to command a crowd. I don't see that person with the ability to command a news cycle.
Lots of tweets. Here's a few. Jay tweets the show, "How should John Rutherford be rated as sheriff, considering the problems Jacksonville still has? Something to consider before voting." Rutherford's record will come up in this race if he throws his hat in.
Who's going to bring it up? I mean, is, you know, let's say it's Jay Phan. Is Jay Phan actually going to, you know, issue the case against John Rutherford as sheriff? I don't see it happening, because he'll have Angela Corey, Mike Williams, people with credibility, St. John's County Sheriff, Nassau County Sheriff, Clay County Sheriff, all saying that Rutherford is the guy. They will come out for him. So, you know, people may make that case, but those people don't matter. They're going to be Democrats making that case, not Republicans.
Matt.
Yeah, I think, again, Rutherford has many advantages with Delaney especially getting out. I mean, that's what's kind of shaken up this race in the last couple of hours. And it's amazing how people don't wait around anymore. You know, they were supposed to honoring Crenshaw yesterday, and all the talk was about who's going to replace him. And I think that Rutherford has the advantages that are stated. There's still an opening for somebody. And whether somebody can take that, whether somebody can raise the money, somebody who can self-finance. We threw around names yesterday in the department. Tim Tebow came up. That would be a dream candidate. He St. John's County, and he covers the whole district. So you just don't know. We're just in a volatile political environment. And what's interesting is this race is going to come a month after the Republican convention. And so, you know, is the candidate going to have to answer questions about Trump and et cetera? And this tax referendum is fascinating. You wouldn't think this would be a big issue in a Republican primary, but it is. And obviously Rutherford's going to support that, because he's talked about this for years. And so, again, there might be room for an anti-tax Tea Partier.
Lenny Curry, of course, needs this tax referendum to pass. Is there a quid pro quo for Lenny Curry supporting John Rutherford for this congressional seat?
Oh, I don't think anybody's going to declare it or admit it on the record. But let's say Rutherford serves 8 years. He's out in 2024. Lenny Curry's out of the mayor's office in 2023. You know, you can see how that works, where Lenny Curry can run a campaign as a former mayor with a record of success. Really informed people bring up that Curry's more interested in statewide office. This is a hard place to run for statewide office from, though. The population is on the I-4 corridor. The population's in Miami. Lenny Curry has tacked to the right on certain issues like Syrian refugees and other issues that play in this part of the state pretty well with the right, but, you know, they are controversial. HRO is another one. If you go, you know, a couple hundred miles down south, these are resolved issues. But here in Jacksonville, they are, you know, burning conflicts. So, we got a long time before 2023. But, Lenny Curry looking at State House seems like an easier path than running for a statewide office, which, you know, we're talking about Andrew Crenshaw. Andrew Crenshaw tried it quite a few times and couldn't get to it.
Here's a few more tweets. Mark tweets the show, "Aaron Bean makes the most sense if we want a chance at a long-term stable representative in Congress. He is one of the names that's come up, State Senator Aaron Bean." Casey tweets the show, "John Delaney's not going for Congress because it would impede his ability to be governor." We'll talk about that in a minute, but first, the number to join us, 549-2937. Bill in Mandarin. Hi, Bill. Go ahead.
Hey, good morning. Just two disagreements. This half-cent city sales tax, I'm against it because analysis has shown if it's a response to the pension fund, it's not needed. The cause for the pension fund was some internal investing poorness. I also disagree with this concept that the longer a person's in office, the more effect they have on Congress. I hearken back to the 2008 great crash. An awful lot of conservative interim longest guys broke the Glass-Steagall Act, which brought us a great problem. Thanks very much.
Thanks for that call.
Okay. You know, I want to unpack a couple of these things. Aaron Bean would represent a 20-year option were he to run. I've heard competing things. Some people say that, you know, he agreed to stand down, but I'm hearing also that, you know, no such deal has been made. So we're going to watch Aaron Bean on that, too. You know, regarding the other issues, in the House, it is about seniority. You don't go up there in your first term, your second year term, your third term, and get what you need. There is a gap of time. There's learning the process, learning the players, learning where you fit into it. So that is an issue. Regarding the pension tax, meanwhile, whatever got us into the situation, the fact is we have a revenue problem. And, you know, Lenny Curry and his political allies are saying that the way to get out is to extend a half-cent sales tax, close those pension plans, amortize the debt burden, and pay it off over a series of years from, say, 2016 up to 2060. The money would come in after the Better Jacksonville Plan tax sunsets, but the money would be amortized, which would, you know, cut the city burden. It would basically ease the general fund $60 million in 2020 and going forward. And you would see through the 2020s money for capital improvements and projects that wouldn't be there otherwise. So, well, yes, there's plenty of ways to cast blame on the pension issue. You know, the fact is that it boils down to a revenue problem right now, and it boils down to a reason to close down those plans, and that's what they want with the referendum.
Matt Corrigan.
Yeah, I think it's a challenge to talk about public policy in a campaign setting, even though that's exactly what we should be talking about. And so what's going to be interesting is the mayor and his political group, which is top-notch. Are they going to make the argument on revenue and, you know, if we don't have this, we can't do this? Or are they going to make a more, a direct connection and just and really highlight the service of police officers and say, if we want a good police force in the future, we need to do this. And so that's going to be an interesting discussion to have, because I think you can see, again, on the national level, policy issues have taken a pretty good beating, because I mean, Donald Trump has just kind of said anything. Sanders on the left has said a lot of things without a lot of plans to back them up. And so it'll be interesting to see if we can have this detailed policy discussion in the heat of August.
It will be interesting. And we appreciate, as always, both of you being here to provide your insights. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Matt Corrigan chairs UNF's political science department. A.G. Kankarski writes for the website Florida Politics. Much more still ahead later, a look at weekend events, one of them being the Riverside Avondale Preservation Tour of Homes. We'll tell you about that in just a moment.
Legal and political segments on First Coast Connect, brought to you by Farrah and Farrah. Join WJCT on April 26th at 6 p.m. for a free preview and panel discussion of the new documentary, The Armor of Light. The film follows an evangelical minister and an African-American mother whose son was murdered as they find common ground in the fight against the rising tide of gun violence in America. Guests include Lucy McBath, mother of Jordan Davis, and national spokesperson, Moms Demand Action for Gun Sense in America. The event is free, but registration is required. Go to wjct.org/events to RSVP.
Coming up on The Next Reveal.
We walked to the mountains. It was cold. It was snowing.
Abdul fled Afghanistan when he was 15 to find refuge in England. But now, the country he considers home wants to send him back.
I'm scared of the Taliban. They're still looking for me.
Kids crossing borders on their own. On The Next Reveal from the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX.
Thursday at 1 on 89.9 WJCT.
The number of heroin-related deaths on the First Coast has more than doubled in a year. Law enforcement is pledging to clamp down on sellers as they urge users to seek help for their powerful addiction. In Community Thread, The Opioid Epidemic, we'll take a look at the factors drawing people toward the needle and the strategies our community is using to fight back. Log on to wjct.org/events/community-thread to submit your questions or to RSVP to be a part of our studio audience on May 10th.
Chicago calls itself a city of neighborhoods. Not all of them, however, created equal. We're taught that the American dream is through home buying, and that's how you build wealth. And there have been forces to conspire against African Americans, against that dream.
I'm Kai Rizdal, Tales from the South Side, next time on Marketplace.
Weekday evenings at 6 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
Well, it's a special event that history and architecture and design buffs look forward to every year, the hottest home tour around. Every spring, residents of the Riverside-Avondale Historic District in Jacksonville open up their homes in an effort to raise money for the city's premier grassroots historic group, Riverside-Avondale Preservation. This Saturday and Sunday, the doors will open once again for a two-day self-guided tour of some incredible private homes. Carmen Godwin of Riverside Avondale Preservation is here now to give us a preview. And Carmen, I look forward to this myself. It is so much fun to do. Good morning.
Good morning.
So what's on the tour this year?
We have a real variety this year. We have homes throughout Riverside and Avondale. I'm really excited that we have three bungalows. We have some of the, one of the largest collections of bungalows in the country, right in the Riverside area. So we have three of those, and two of them have edible yards, which
is
really cool.
Oh, wow.
And then we have three homes that are actually on the water as well.
How do you decide which homes to feature every year? Because I've gone through the tour several times now, and every year it's different.
Every year it's different. We have a list of homes that are just homes that we want to get in, and we ask those owners every single year, you know, and then sometimes we get lucky.
you beg, basically.
We do. We beg, borrow, and steal. We knock on doors. We plead.
You finally wear them down.
Yes.
So that thousands of strangers can troop through their beautiful home.
Exactly.
For two straight days. That's a testament to your people skills, isn't it, that you get them to do this?
Well, yes, and we have a good team. Joy Walker, who's with Berkshire Hathaway, she is a joy, and she goes around and knocks on doors as well and helps me through that process. So she makes it easier for me.
Now, of course, this is one of the largest historic residential districts in the U.S., if not the largest, isn't it?
It is one of the largest historic districts. And so we have over 5,000 structures in our district. One of the ones that I'm really excited about as well that we're featuring is the Sangeline Condominiums, which turns 100 this year. And it was built along with Memorial Park, which is an Olmsted Firm park. Mm-hmm. And so you can see when you're in Memorial Park how that building was built to go with the park, and it all has river views and everything. So that's going to be a fun one on the tour as well.
If you go to RAP or RAPHometour.com right now, you can buy tickets for this event, and you can go through the tour on Saturday or Sunday or both. Now, let's talk a little bit about the history of Riverside Avondale Preservation. When people drive through the neighborhood, they'll see the RAP signs on homes. Before Wayne Wood and others began this organization, many of these gorgeous, historically and architecturally significant properties were in danger of being torn down.
Absolutely. In fact, we have a great video on the RAP website, riversideavondale.org, that you can see some of the buildings that were torn down. We lost about 1,400 structures within a 15-year period before the ordinance was passed to protect them.
People were tearing them down to build modern homes, right?
Modern buildings or just empty lots, which what's the value of that?
Isn't that incredible? But the mindset was very different then.
It was different. You know, people had moved out to the suburbs. The neighborhood was in decline. And so, you know, with Wayne Wood and others who gathered together about 40 years ago, they really rallied around to save structure by structure because they knew the value of it.
What is the main mission today for RAP? What is really what's driving you? Now that you've won the battle of preserving these properties, it's moved to a different phase.
Yeah, we still are very much involved in preservation. We also get involved in zoning issues as well for infill projects. But I think our biggest mission is really revolved around quality of life issues. So, you know, like right now we're building a dog park under the Fuller Warren Bridge. It's actually under construction. Mm-hmm. We're just finishing up and having a ribbon cutting for a community garden across from Willow Branch Park. Planting trees and parks and things like that that really add to the quality of life for the people who live and work and play in the neighborhood.
Because it's beauty and it's, its unique character is something that I think people that live in the neighborhood are really passionate about.
It's a special place. It's not a place where you drive home and you park your car in a garage and you go in and you're to yourself. You know, it is a front porch atmosphere where neighbors know each other and they feel really connected to their neighborhood. So I feel lucky to live in the neighborhood, but I also feel really fortunate that we're able to have the home tour to share it with the people who maybe don't live here but want to come and get a little piece of it.
That's right. If you've never done this tour, this is your opportunity because it is this weekend. What do people need to know? What are some do's and don'ts for this tour?
I would say don't wear heels because a lot of these homes have old, well, they also have old wood floors that we try to protect.
Yeah.
And a lot of walking as well. There's a bike tour that starts on Saturday that's free. You can just jump on a bike or bring your bike. It starts at City Cycle at 10 a.m. and you can, that's one of the, wonderful way to see the homes because, you know, you're actually, we have a guide who gives you a little history of the neighborhood and everything as well.
Mm-hmm.
We also have a design, preview party tonight, at one of the houses on Morningside, which is one of the waterfront homes. And there are 10 designers who have each taken a room and designed something really special in those rooms. And so that'll be something fun to make sure that people go, make sure you go and see that home.
And either day, people can, it's the same tour both days.
It's the same tour. It's self-guided. You can go half of the homes on one day and half on the other, or you can try and knock it all out in one day. There's lots of wonderful eateries and restaurants and 3 commercial corridors in the neighborhood. Stop for lunch. Enjoy those areas as well.
And this is the which annual tour?
42nd.
42nd. My gosh. It is the 42nd annual Riverside Avenue Historic District's Tour of Homes. Go to the website raphometour.com and get your tickets now. Carmen Godwin, running Riverside Avondale Preservation and doing such a wonderful job. Thanks so much, and we'll see you out there this weekend.
I will see you this weekend. Thank you.
And more weekend events to talk about in a few minutes. We'll be right back.
I'm Al Letson, and I'm hosting a brand new show here on WJCT, and I'm bringing some friends with me.
Everything, with Al Letson as the host, and Willie Evans Jr. as the DJ. Well, he's not really a DJ, but he does something.
Every week, we'll be bringing you some stories, some laughs, and something to think about. Sundays at 2 and Wednesdays at 1. Everything, because we're going to do everything we want.
Everything, the opposite of nothing.
WJCT and Grassroots Natural Market are accepting submissions from local artists for The Square. The Square is an online venue where artists share their work with the community and compete for a chance to be featured on WJCT TV and radio. Submit now through April 30th. To learn more about The Square and to submit your work, visit wjct.org/thesquare.
On the next Fresh Air, comic W. Kamau Bell. He's bringing his political and social satire to CNN in a new docu-series called United Shades of America. He initially pitched the show as a black guy goes to places he shouldn't go or we wouldn't expect him to go. In the first episode, he meets several leaders of the Ku Klux Klan and witnesses a cross-burning. Join us. Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Join WJCT at the Timucua National Ecological and Historic Preserve on April 16th to explore the outdoors. Kids will have the opportunity to become a National Park Junior Ranger, hunt for nature treasures, win prizes, and more. Curious George will be on hand with Main Metal Recycling, teaching families how to recycle. This fun family event is free and runs from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Go to wjct.org/events for more information.
Welcome back. Well, it is an evening of old-fashioned fun, and it really does benefit so many families in crisis all around the First Coast. The Catholic Charities 2016 Gala, Picnic Style, is coming up. Executive Director Lauren Whedon-Hopkins is here to tell us about it. And this sounds like a lot of fun, casual, fun, a great evening for everybody.
Right. Good morning, Melissa.
Good morning.
Good to see you. Next Saturday night, April 23rd, we will be at the Hyatt Regency downtown starting at 6 o'clock. Our cocktail hour is going to be beer and wine and Lynchburg lemonade served in mason jars.
Very nice. So this is like a real picnic.
Yes, exactly. You can wear casual clothes. We wanted it to be fun and not your typical black tie event. So, but during the cocktail hour, you can play croquet, horseshoes. You have a chance to dig for a diamond that's donated from Beard's Jewelry. Putting
dig
contest.
Where?
We're going to have a little sandbox that you can, and the diamond's worth $2,500. So, and we will give it away that night.
Wow. Putting contest. The people are going to be putting a golf green.
Exactly. Yep. So we just wanted to make it fun and backyard, casual, you know, have a good time. And so from 6 to 8 is the cocktail hour. And then starting at 8, we'll have a picnic dinner, upscale food. It's very, it's delicious. And dancing from straight up. And it'll just be a lot of fun.
This is all to support your mission. Let's talk a little bit about the vital work Catholic Charities does. And we say this every time you guys come on the show. You serve the entire community,
exactly.
Not just people of the Catholic faith.
Right, exactly. We're open to all. We serve everyone, regardless of their background. And that is our mission, is to help families who are in crisis. So this event, 100% of it goes directly to people to help with client assistance, such as rent, utilities, mortgage payments. We do things to help people stay in their homes and keep families together.
And in this era of budget cuts and with so many people struggling, the nonprofit community has had to really, in this area, find creative ways to raise money and
exactly.
help those who need it. This is one way of doing that.
Right. And even if you can't come to the event next Saturday, we are having a drawing for a trip for two to Banff in Canada. It's a 4-night, 5-day trip. And it's just a $50 donation, and you'd have a chance to win that great trip.
Now, how'd you come up with the theme this year? And by the way, what is in Lynchburg lemonade? I'm guessing something nice and strong.
Yeah, just a nice kind of springtime drink. With the picnic, we just hadn't seen that done before, and we thought it would be fun. You know, not your typical black tie. And we are transforming the Hyatt into a backyard paradise with lights that are strung through the ceiling and
red
know,
and white check tablecloths.
Exactly, gingham.
Got any hay
napkins.
Bales scattered around, maybe?
Yeah, we have some barrels and things like that. So.
Yeah, it's fun to kind of brainstorm and come up with a theme for an event that's a little different.
Then exactly.
People kind of can get a little burned out on the usual, I hate to say this, the rubber chicken circuit.
Right.
you want to get away from that.
That's right. And our food is going to be served family style. We've got delicious fried chicken and great potato salad, grilled vegetables, this shrimp pasta, you know, it's fun, different, and the tickets are only $150, but if you're under age 35, it's $100. And we just hope to see you all there.
It's coming up next Saturday night at the Hyatt. Come on out to an old-style picnic for the Catholic Charities event, their 2016 gala. Go to their website, ccbjax.org, and get your tickets. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
We're going to tell you about more weekend events in just a few minutes. We'll be right back.
In El Salvador, gangs terrorize people.
Le dijo de que quería a su hija como novia.
The gang member told her, I want your daughter as a girlfriend.
Le arruinaron su vida.
They ruined her life.
Desde los 18 años,
before she was 18.
An up-close look at El Salvador's violent gang wars and the trauma they cause. Later on All Things Considered from NPR News. Today at 4 on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
This is the sound of drama.
This is the sound of your community.
Good morning, and live from Studio 5, this is First Coast Connect on 89.
Stay connected. Stay informed. Enjoy live streaming of your favorite local WJCT and PBS and NPR content, all free from your devices. The WJCT app, available now in the Apple App Store and Google Play.
We see the laughs, the smiles, on stage and screen when the actor magically inhabits someone else's role. But the hardest character to play is the one without a script. On the Next Step Judgment, the performer. Snap Judgment, storytelling with the beat. Do not miss it.
Sundays at 1 on 89.9 WJCT. WJCT and Baptist Health are pleased to announce that Amy Robach, news anchor of ABC's Good Morning America, will be this year's afternoon keynote speaker at Girls' Day Out, September 17, 2016, Hyatt Regency Riverfront Hotel. Amy is also a breast cancer awareness advocate and author of My Breast Cancer Journey, From Fighter to Thriver. For more information or for tickets, log on to wjct.org/girlsdayout.
Welcome back. Well, lots of events going on all around town this weekend. And wait a minute. Could that be the music of Electro Lounge right here?
Oh, it is.
It is. It's our own music director, David Luckin.
Because I haven't been on the radio enough this week.
Carrie Speckman couldn't make it today. So David, as always, the pinch hitter extraordinaire. We couldn't ever get anything done around here without your multitasking and multi-talented abilities. David's going to take us through some weekend events, and there's lots on your list.
Let's start with your talent.
Thank you.
Documentary Film Festival.
The first annual Jacksonville Documentary Film Festival is taking place Saturday and Sunday in the Five Points area.
And we'll both be there.
I will be there with bells on, along with my filmmaking partners, Bernardo Santana and Frank Gooden Jr., because years ago we made a film called The 904, Shadow on the Sunshine State, and all of the issues that we raised in that film are as relevant today as ever. It's all about Jacksonville's gun violence problem and its problem with its high homicide rate and our status as the state's murder capital off and on for many years now. And I'm pleased to be part of this really exciting new event celebrating documentary film. It looks as though, I'm looking at their schedule at jacksdocfest.org, and it looks as though the 904 is the first film to kick off this film festival. So come on out to Rain Dogs in Five Points at 2:00 Saturday. We will screen the film and then do a Q&A afterwards, and then you can stick around and see all of the other films. They'll be at Rain Dogs and the Sunray Cinema. Pretty exciting.
What a great weekend. I mean, we've got music festivals and boxing and film festivals. And let's start with the Mindspring Music Festival with more than 60 bands, MCs, and DJs. And I believe most of them are all local on Friday and Saturday at the St. Johns County Fairgrounds. Proceeds benefit Autism Speaks. You can see and hear Too Many Zoos, Dan Deacon, Pacifier, Soul Con, and so many more. It's going to be a great festival down in St. John's.
St. John's County. Meanwhile, here at our own Veterans Memorial Arena, this is an annual tradition. It's Guns and Hoses Weekend.
Yeah,
that's when the police and the firefighters
duke it out
in the boxing ring.
And the street fighting, street party begins at 3:30.
Exactly.
After party at 9:30, but the bell rings at 6:30, and they will be in the ring, and it's also for a good cause.
What night is Guns N' Hoses this
that
year?
That is, did I write it down here? I believe it's Saturday night.
Saturday night, it's Guns N' Hoses. They have raised so many hundreds of thousands of dollars for the Muscular Dystrophy Association. Lots of fun. And then next door at the baseball grounds, the Suns are playing this weekend. Hopefully good weather will hold out.
The weatherman is promising sunshine for Sunday, so it'll be a great day to be at the baseball grounds there to see our local team at 5:05 Sunday. I think I might go to that too.
Yeah, that'll be fun. Now, up in Fernandina Beach, it's the 12th annual Katie Ride for Life. This is a great bicycling event that raises money for organ donation. April is actually National Donate Life Month, and when a wonderful teenage girl named Katie Caples passed away in a car accident years ago, her parents made sure that she gave the gift of life to lots of other people through organ donation. Go to katieridefortlife.org. This is something you can do with your kids. It's a bicycling event, and they also have, I think, a fun run and walk.
I believe there is, and you sign in at between 6 and 7:15 a.m. to do the bike ride. And just a cultural reminder for next Tuesday, if you've got kids and you want to go, or just yourself, the Cummer is always free on Tuesdays, thanks to our friends at Florida Blue.
Absolutely. Okay, let's talk about Players by the Sea.
This looks really good.
They're actually coming here to do the show tomorrow.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah,
okay.
Their new play is called All the Way with LBJ, and it's all about Lyndon Johnson. The actor that plays LBJ in this production, I've heard, is fantastic. This debuts next Thursday at Players by the Sea. This is, that era in our political history is one that has kind of come.
Should I say I remember it well?
Yeah, of course you do. And I think Bryan Cranston played this
role
on Broadway.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so it's the same play that Bryan Cranston did on Broadway, All the Way with LBJ. Players by the Sea, that kicks off next week. Oh, and Chris Isaak at the Florida Theater.
Gotta love him. The modern day Roy Orbison. Playing Friday night. Well, I'm sorry, April 24th. So that's, we're just giving you a little notice here so you have time to get tickets. And if you really want to flashback.
There he is.
Boy, Sean is on the job
here.
He is here.
On it.
If
as
he doesn't
always.
Sound like Roy Orbison, boy, I don't know who does. Listen to that voice.
Who can forget that video, by the way?
Oh, yeah, exactly. And if you want to flash back to the 80s just a little bit more, heads up, June 12th, guess who's going to be at the St. Augustine Amphitheater?
Do tell, David Luckin.
Girls Just Want to Have Fun and True Colors and all those great songs from Cyndi Lauper.
Cyndi Lauper's coming?
And now a star on
Broadway.
Shut
the front door.
Yeah, there you go.
I love her.
She'll be great. She's so talented.
Our own Richard Borders, who shoots our video stream for TV Jax, probably toured with Cyndi, because I think he's toured with just about anyone you can name. So I'll ask him about that after the show.
There's a little Cyndi.
I see your true colors. That's why I love you. So don't be afraid to let them show your true colors.
One of the nicest songs from the
80s. I love that song.
That's such a great song.
So she's
Do you remember
coming...
the Kodak commercial? They used that.
Oh, I know. It got used a lot.
Yeah.
So June 12th, she's coming to the amphitheater. And let's also plug very quickly the successful launch. You and Sean Birch and our own engineer, Alan Rhodes, all deserve huge pats on the back for our own late night Relax Radio music channel.
Well, we're real happy with it. We're up to 3,000 songs and growing, and it's we've got new music and old music and music from the 40s, 50s, 60s, 80s, 90s. We've even got a new Taylor Swift song in there from 1989.
Which one?
Clean, the one she wrote with Imogen Heap.
How'd you decide on that?
Because it's so nice.
Very
and,
nice.
And it's not quite as poppy as her other stuff, so it fit the mood really well for Relax. You know Imogen Heap from Let Go, from Frou Frou. Oh,
okay.
And she's an indie girl, and it turns out Taylor really likes the indie music, even though she's so mainstream. So the end of 1989 is this really nice song called Clean.
You and Sean together programmed all the songs on Relax Radio, and you can listen to it every night beginning at midnight on 89.9 FM or anytime on our HD3 channel if you have an HD radio.
Music for Dreams, midnight to 5.
It's so fabulous, and I know you've gotten incredibly good feedback already.
Good feedback and good ratings on the HD channel. We finally got ratings, and so it's 24 hours a day on HD3 if you've got an HD radio, and midnight to 5, 7 days a week on 89.9.
Now, when Jones College Radio stopped its 60-year tradition in this area of playing standards, you saw the opportunity and you rushed to fill that gap in the market with, not only are you playing standards from the Great American Songbook, as you said, there's some more modern music in there,
Absolutely.
Too.
Absolutely. And there's a lot of oldies, a lot of great Motown and British Invasion and Elvis and the Righteous Brothers and Roy Orbison, all that great music we're playing.
You can also catch it on our WJCT app.
24 hours a day. I'm glad you reminded us of that. And we would be remiss if we didn't thank everyone out there for...
Let's give our listeners a hand for helping us meet our goal this spring and raise $80,000 to keep programs like Relax Radio, First Coast Connect, our local news, and all the national radio shows you love going strong. our listeners helped us meet our goal early, actually.
3 days. We did a half a pledge and made the whole amount. So we're really happy. Thanks to everyone out there who supported us quietly for the first couple of weeks when we were just asking in little breaks. And then we only had to interrupt programming for 3 days, actually 2.5 days. We wrapped this up at noon yesterday.
Isn't that exciting?
What a great community.
It is. And we all of our listeners listening out there that donated and those that listen regularly, we thank you so much for helping us bring this information and music and entertainment to you every day. Thanks again for all your support. And music director David Luckin, we wouldn't be here if it weren't for you. And I could tell that story all day long, especially in the early days of this program when we were just getting it started. I can never thank you enough.
My pleasure. Just a team player.
And that's our program. Thanks so much for listening. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. This show's producer is Sean Birch, the show theme composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony's Pyotr Shevchuk. Make sure to catch our video on demand segments every day at our partner tvjax.com. Diane Reams up next. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT FM Jacksonville. Your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow for our Friday Media Roundtable. See you then.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.